right, 807 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings on this Tuesday. Glad you're here. The segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Saw the vehicle riding down the street outside my neighborhood. I guess that was Thursday. That's Trey and his crew. They do great work in Mobile and Baldwin counties. It's as simple as this. You identify the junk and they make it go away. Like it's a magic trick. Like it's David Copperfield. There and then, boom, or whatever the sound would be, it's gone. Hey, listen, if you have, it could be a junk issue at the house or outside the house. This is something I want to continue to point out, that we all kind of think, okay, we've got this boxes in the attic or whatever we want to get rid of. Let's say you've got a swing set in the backyard and your youngest child's in graduate school. Maybe it's time to get rid of it. That's junk, too. They can haul that off. They can work at a storage unit you want to clean out. You got a house to get ready to sell. They can do that. Or maybe your office. Maybe you've gone completely digital at your office and you have 7 or 8 gigantic metal filing cabinets. I'm not saying that's us. But if you want to get rid of that junk, you can get rid of it there. So listen, if you got junk, that's all you have to do is identify the junk and then call 1-800-GOT-JUNK or go online to 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com and get an appointment with my buddy Trey. Been in business for over 11 years now in Mobile and Baldwin counties. He does great work, and get him to come out to your place today. All right, we'll check in with Quinn Hillier from QuinnHillier.com, also the author of the Mad Jones trilogy, available now, right, Quinn?
Available at Amazon.
So they can pick up, buy all three at one time.
Buy all three at one time. It would be great.
All right. And if people have not heard, I mean, it's a satire of sorts, right?
Oh, yes. It's literary fiction, but satire on modern religion, media, and politics at the same time. And I go after the fake news media, although it's set 20 years ago. And anyway, it should be a lot of fun to read.
Now, all those things you're not supposed to talk about at the dinner table are all
exactly
in a trilogy.
That's why I did it.
All right, I want to get into a couple things, local stories and state stories. First of all, this is the trigger word for a lot of people, toll. And for who the bridge tolls or something like that. That latest on projected tolling for the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project.
Well, look, the idea that we're even really talking tolls, other than some sort of nominal thing that, you know, that frequent commuters might, you know, be asked to buy a $50, you know, thing or whatever. Anything, any serious tolling, you know, $3 to $6, that's absurd. And you've done a good job pointing out that, you know, 25 years ago they were talking about a federal match of 80%, now they're talking 7%. But here's what I don't get. We have the chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee, Richard Shelby. He is the chairman of the single most powerful spending committee in Congress. I used to work for the chairman of the House Appropriations Committee. If the chairman of the committee wants $2 billion spread out over several years, he gets it. At least that's how it used to be. And for Shelby not to be able to deliver this with, you know, at least a 50-50 federal match, meaning $1 billion mm-hmm. of federal money over several years, that's absurd. He's got the power. I don't understand why he can't do it. I mean, yes, I
want you to understand, because I don't understand. I've been asking this question now for weeks and weeks and weeks, if not over that. That and another sub-question here on the Port of Mobile. But with that one, I mean, what Quinn's saying, y'all, I mean, the biggest dog in the big dog house is the chairman of appropriations, and that is Senator Shelby. This would be, and for somebody who's shown himself to be very deft in bringing funding and federal largesse back to Alabama, I don't get it, Quinn. I don't. There's some piece missing that I don't get.
Well, I think what we need to do is offer to call it the Richard Shelby Bridge.
I've offered every way.
You know, when there's a Richard Shelby building on every college campus there is, we get the money. Especially, you got to remember, we have a president who is supported more strongly, higher percentage by the last 3 polls I've seen in Alabama than in any state in the union. And if Shelby picks up the phone and calls Trump and says to Trump, please put this in your budget request. They do have budget rules now they didn't have when I was there 25 years ago. They have a ban on so-called, what the feds call earmarking, which is different from what we call earmarking. But it's where you cannot add a specific project that's not included in the president's submitted budget. You can change the overall dollars, but you can't add a specific project. The way to solve that is easy. You call up the president and you say, Alabama helped put you on the map. Alabama helped put you where you are. Please put this in your requested budget. Presto changeo, it's in the budget. It's not subject to the anti-earmarking rules, and you can go forward with it. That's how it works.
Yeah, let me add on to this, what Quinn is saying, because I followed this over time with the career of our senior senator. During the Bush administration, in that budget, just like he explained for President Trump, Senator Shelby had those line items put in. And then in the budgets presented by Barack Obama, President Obama, who would have been the counter to Richard Shelby, there were line items for Shelby put into those budgets as well. So how that now with President Trump has turned, is that because, you know, Senator Shelby was not a vocal enough supporter? Is it something that petty, or is it something bigger that he's lost influence in Washington? I'm glad you're talking about this, because I've been left scratching my head on this one.
Well, the excuse is now we have the rules, which we didn't have in the first 2 years of the Obama presidency. Now we have the rule against earmarking. But again, there's an exception to the rule against earmarking, and that is, as I say, if it is in the president's
budget. Yes, and he's shown himself to be able to do that before.
Well, so I mean, I just don't get it. People need to call his office and say, find a way, get this done, at least at a 50-50 match. $1 billion federal dollars over, say, spread over 3 or 4 years, that is for a project that more than 20 years ago the feds themselves said was a priority project. If it has been a priority project for 20 years, surely they can come up with $1 billion while we come up with $1 billion in the state in order to get this done. It is the key hurricane evacuation route for the entire Central Gulf Coast. And
a big military
link. The money from the Transportation Department, find it from Health and Human Services, which has to do with the disaster preparation.
Right, and also a link of many, many military bases, so you could argue it that way as
exactly.
Well. So it leads me back to wondering, and I've said this to some of the people that are in positions to have some know in this, and I don't hear much. I said, well, would it not be better after all these years, the decades of working on this, that you just hold your cards here until 2020 and see if President Trump is reelected? And if he is, maybe then you have a better chance of getting this done through an infrastructure instead of running with it now. After all these decades, can we just stand another year and a half here to wait and see?
Well, no, I think the time to strike is now, because this is when candidates are making promises in order to buy votes.
But it's not happening. That's the thing. It's not. I agree with you. You're spot on, but that's not happening.
Somebody needs to get to Shelby to get to Trump. It is doable. Yes, it's a lot of money for a single project, but it's not a lot of money when you look at the overall federal budget. And it is necessary for military, for hurricane evacuation, for all these other reasons. It is a necessary project, and has been necessary for 25 years.
Thank
period.
You. And another angle on this, and we'll run the break here shortly, but I watched this in a Politico story I talked about several times. Heck, I even printed it, and I don't print anything. I printed it out. I still have it in my notebook right here in the studio, and I talked about it and tried to get reaction. There was a Politico story about 3 weeks ago, and it was when they were still had not signed off on the disaster relief aid bill. And it points out in the Politico story, it was held up by Senator Shelby, who wanted in that bill, that disaster relief bill, to have funding put in for, I think, harbor, the term was harbor maintenance and deepening or something like that, which sure to me sounds like the federal portion of the money that the gas tax was going to match. Remember the portion of the gas tax that was going to peel off to be able to match the federal dollars so they could do what needs to be done at the port. It looks like he finally capitulated without getting that in, which to me, there you go. There's another one that he this thing didn't happen. Maybe it's another kind of funding. Maybe there's other money somewhere else.
He did get in. One of these, what do they call it? It's like the Natchez Trace. One of these parkway trails
they
have in North Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
He just got $36.8 million. I pointed this out on Twitter, and somebody immediately chimed in on Twitter and said, I drive that to work every single day. It's already really nice. I have no idea what you could even possibly use $37 million for it. You know, how you could use $37 million for, you know, these are one of these drive parkways that has a trail on it and all this kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
$36.8 million. Now, that's $36.8 million that could be coming down to South Alabama, not to gussy up a trail that's already nice, but to actually solve a major, major infrastructure problem.
I got to read that story. Can you hold on during the news break?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Coming right back. More with Quentin Hillier here on Mobile Mornings. Have a look at your text as well at 343-0106. I mean, these are questions that I think are fair questions to ask, and I'm just not getting answers, have not gotten answers on this one. I mean, the biggest of the big dogs, appropriations, head of appropriations in the Senate? FM Talk 106.5, and it is Mobile Mornings on this Tuesday. Continue our conversation with Quentin Hillier, quinnhillier.com, also the author of Mad Jones, the trilogy, available now on Amazon. All right, and Quinn, now on to, I mean, I guess that's also state news, I mean, obviously, but we're involving the federal angle. Now one that's all right here inside the state, and it's one that I was discussing there at the end of session, and this move to change the way the State Board of Education gets its membership. Can we back up and kind of lay it out? How does it work now?
How it works now is they have members elected by individual districts. And then in addition to those, I believe it's 8 districts, the governor is also on automatically. So they're non-members, if I got it right. I think I got it right. Maybe there's 7 members.
But see, anyway. There are 7 members. But that's what I'm getting at. I've asked the question. I mean, most people don't know how many members there are.
Members elected by individual districts, excuse me, and then the governor.
Yes.
So there's 7 members. And so they're elected. And the state legislature has now decided to put on the amendment, on the ballot, a statewide constitutional amendment to make them all appointed by the governor. And there are reasonable arguments both ways. I tend to lean in favor of elected, okay? But there are reasonable arguments both ways. That's, you know, that's maybe a topic for another day. But in the meantime, with the media hasn't noticed that right at the last minute, as this was making its way through the legislature to put on the ballot, they added an amendment to the constitutional amendment that purports to get rid of Common Core. Now, you've heard me for 8 years now talk about getting rid of Common Core. You'd think I'd be thrilled.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-uh. Because the wording of this is so bad, it actually makes things worse. It says, in lieu of Common Core, and it uses small c common and small c core, which doesn't actually mean anything. So right there, it doesn't actually affect the Common Core standards, capital letters.
But wait. Okay. I know what you're saying, small c, and not the brand name Common Core, but, you know, brand name Common Core by definition is little c Common Core, right?
No, brand name is big C, big C.
I understand, but by definition of it, wouldn't it be defined as?
No, because those are ordinary words, and so if you just talk about something that is small c common and small c a core, it could mean anything. So, anyway, apart from the capitalization, it says in lieu of Common Core, they need to just in, they are charged with ensuring standards that are of national consistency. Well, that's the entire, or not the entire, but a big part of the problem with Common Core is they are nationalized standards. So if you have something in the state constitution, it would now be saying you want standards that ensure national consistency. What that does is by other language, it enshrines a national set of standards into Alabama, and you don't, you know, you don't have a choice. You have to find something that can be defined as national. Well, if it's defined as national, there's not any other thing out there that's national other than Big C Common, Big C Core.
Do you think that
so
was by design?
It enshrines it in the Constitution in the name of getting rid of it.
You wonder why people get so frustrated with the Byzantine work of government. I mean, do you think that was by design, or do you think it was ignorance?
I think it was badly worded, and I think that, that you know, enabling legislation to, you know, if the constitutional amendment passes, then they have to have enabling legislation to actually put it into effect, and they'll try to fix it, maybe. But they shouldn't have it in the first place. The wording is terrible. And whether by design or by mistake, it messes things up. What they say is they have another clause that talks about so that students can come in and out of Alabama schools with some kind of consistency. And what they're talking about is military families moving from Georgia to Alabama or Pennsylvania to Alabama, and they want them to be able to stay somewhere on the same track, so it doesn't, you know, so it's not completely tough for the military families. That's what they're trying to do by talking about national consistency. But it doesn't say military. It says national consistency for the state. And that means you're stuck. So anyway, it's very badly worded, and it's another reason not to be very happy with the constitutional amendment that's going to be on the ballot.
All right. Well, and we will have you back to talk about the other nuance, whether you elect or appoint, because I think there's a, I can see both sides of that, and I think it'd be an interesting discussion.
Yeah, and I can see both sides, but I tend to prefer elective, but that, as I say, that's for another day.
All right. Quinn, remind folks where they can get your work and read your thoughts.
QuinnHillier.com, or just Google Quinn Hillier Washington Examiner, and you'll find 90% of it.
Good stuff, Quinn. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
All right, Quinn Hillier joining us here. We'll grab your calls and thoughts from the text line and the phone line at 343-0106, 343-0106. Also, heads up, taking the midday show on the road today. We're going to be at the Cart Doctor. Of course, Cart Doctor, one of our partners in the Big Green Deal, and your chance to come out today, get 20% off accessories when you get a cart, and at the same time, get your name in the registration box for over $9,000 worth of prizes. We'll be drawing for that in like a little over 3 weeks. Your chance to get registered today. Cart Doctor and Theodore, come out, enjoy some lunch with us, some FM Talk 106.5 goodies, and we won't tell on you. You spend like 2 hours for lunch, we won't tell. By the way, Sheriff Sam Cochran's going to join me at the location today. He's going to be with us, so we'll talk more about that coming up.
Hey, thank you, Kane. 836 now on FM Talk 106.5. This is Mobile Mornings. It's time to head over to McConnell Automotive and talk to Mitch McConnell. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, Dalton. Good morning, buddy.
Good morning. So if I'm heading over to McConnell Automotive today, what are some of the rides on the lot that I just have to check out?
Well, I think my favorite right now is we have a special AT4 Sierra. You know, everybody's talking about the six-function na-na-na-na tailgate. But this one, Dalton, is special, man. It's even lifted further from the manufacturer, and I think it's probably one of the coolest colors, smoky quartz. People just, Dalton, need to check this vehicle out. We're on Dolphin Street. You know, if you're driving a Ford Raptor, anything that you think is a cool truck, and it probably is a cool truck if you got one of those, but you need to check this GMC out. And don't, we've heard for years, I've been in the business more than my whole life, or my family has at least, and you know, people have bad experiences shopping at car dealerships, but at McConnell, you never will, because we're going to always be transparent, take care of people, and just really listen to their needs and make shopping easy. And I think a truck is probably the most popular thing out, and McConnellAutomotive.com is a website. And these new trucks, don't, nobody needs to buy a truck unless they drive a GMC first. And if they don't want a GMC after that, that is cool. But I think people are making a mistake if they don't drive one first. And the AT4 is my favorite thing going, buddy.
All right. Good to know. Thank you, Mitch. Have a great day.
Man, y'all have a great one, Dalton.
That's Mitch McConnell. Go see him at McConnell Automotive on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65.
Maybe a truck is what Dad needs for Father's Day.
Yeah, I would say so.
New truck, that'd be good. And coming to the phones, y'all hold on. I mentioned it earlier that the survey out for the New York Post says what we dads want most for Father's Day.
Mm-hmm.
See if you agree with this. A phone call from my kids. Well, I don't. They're actually this year I will, because my daughter, who is, we sent off today to go stay with my sister for a while, and traveling with an unaccompanied minor with the chaperone from the airline. I'm a nervous dad this morning. But the other way, the son, I don't want him calling me because he doesn't have a phone. He can call me. I mean, he's just in my house. Okay.
I don't want mine to call me because, I mean, what would I get done there?
If she starts calling you. So, but for, I understand, if your kids are out of the house, I get that. A big steak, 41%.
Oh, yeah. I like big steak. I like that.
Okay, here's a complete dad line. Some peace and quiet, 38%. Watching a baseball game with the family, not peace and quiet, 38%. A few beers, 35%.
Mm-hmm.
I would add this, more than a few beers, 40%. Now, number six on their list, a cheap practical gift like socks or a tie, 35% of dads said yes.
Okay, they're just saying that.
Must be 2019. A glass of wine, which I do like. I like red wine, but 34%. To watch whatever I want on TV, 34%.
Would you be in that line?
Yeah, but I can't, because the things that's why I don't watch TV, because they're inappropriate shows for my children, so I don't watch them. Number nine, a glass of whiskey, 29%. And then an expensive physical gift like an Apple Watch, something tech like that, 29%. So
I would have to go with the beer, the steak, and the peace and quiet.
Yeah, that's a pretty good
combination. All at one time.
It's a pretty good combination. All right, to 840, let's grab some calls here at 343-0106. And Joel's in Mobile, first up. Hey, Joel.
Hey, good morning. All right, now that we're talking about the bridge span and stuff this morning, and now that I heard about a nature trail that was about $40 million.
Yeah, I'm trying to find that story, too.
I am, too.
What about the sports complex that's being announced that down here in Alberta, which is 9 baseball fields, 7 soccer fields, who approved the grant for that, which is supposed to be the largest grant in the state of Alabama as of right now? Who signed off on all this money?
Well, is it the question, is that local or is it, let's see.
This is the state. I mean,
I'm looking at it here. Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out where the, because a lot of times, Joel, these things, it would be like a portion of, there's federal grant money for X, and then so the state comes up with Y, and the local municipality has to come up with Z. Let me see what the breakdown is.
Well, I don't know how much money Alberta's got, but it ain't one stoplight. I mean, I don't know. It ain't that too much population of people. I mean, I know it's in South Baldwin County, but just don't.
I tell you what, we will dig in and figure out how that's funded. I don't know that off the top of my head. I do not know.
I just see a lot of money going other places when it should be, the main priority would be this bridge.
Right. I still think we need to wait.
I
think we need to, and that's Quinn disagreed with me, but I right now, I think you wait. President Trump wins re-election, and then the Democrats can't oppose him on infrastructure, and then you make another bite at the apple and see if you can't get, because it is ridiculous. It used to be 80-20. I mean, I've been reporting on the story forever. It was 80-20, 80% federal, 20% state, local, municipality, and then all of a sudden it's 7%. 7% federal money. That's it.
That's right. That's kind of crazy. I don't know. I don't think Shelby's got as much pull as what everybody thought he had.
or something's changed.
He might have back in a few years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know.
What changed, though?
Missing. I'm like you. There's something missing. and they don't something's linked not right.
Y'all
have a great day, Sean.
Hey, thank you too, Joel. Appreciate the call. I mean, I think there's some other portions of this that I don't yet understand.
Is it possible that, you know, I mean, he's getting up there in age, probably the twilight of his political career. I don't know if he's running for re-election. I mean, because when would his re-election be up? 2024? Is that mm-hmm. when we'd be looking
And we, you know, a lot of us surmise that some of the things he had to say back during the special election for Senate, that was going to be his last run. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that.
So maybe it's just not, you know, worth it for him personally to put his to make anybody angry up there in Washington, D.C., just to make us people down here
in
Alabama happy.
If he's out, why does he care?
He's going to come back home. I don't know. Maybe someone's got a house for him up where he can hang out. I don't know. Maybe it's just not worth it to him as much anymore to make sure that his people in Alabama are well taken care of.
I don't think so. I think the idea, you know, people say it as a joke, but I'm completely serious. If we want to call it the Senator Richard Shelby, cool. The man has been a master. I've argued this over time. You might not like the way the game is played in Washington, and I don't. But I've said until I believe that every other state is going to reset, you know, and reset their seniority. For a long time, when Senator Sessions was still there, we had the most senior Senate delegation. And that made a big deal for mm-hmm. a state like us, where we're going to be outmatched in the House of Representatives for the just volume of population elsewhere. Here on the even playing field of the Senate, we have this senior delegation that could get things done. And they did. And getting things done is pork and spending and all these things that, in the overall 30,000-foot view, I'm not crazy about. I mean, you know, I'm a fiscal conservative. That's the thing that drives me. At the same time, I also am pragmatic enough to realize the way the game is played. And as long as we're playing by those rules, you know, one of those A-listers of getting things back to their state was Richard Shelby.
Yeah.
And it seems something is going on now, something that there's got to be a component to this that I don't get yet. But I'm going to keep looking.
What do you think if Jeff Sessions was still our senator, not Doug Jones? Do you think this would look differently right now?
Man, I don't know. I don't know. And as much as you know, I'm easy to say, yeah, Senator mm-hmm. Sessions, Senator Sessions. I don't know. I don't know, because it's not Senator Sessions. It would be head of appropriations. It's the man who is now head of appropriations, Senior Senator Richard Shelby. All right, 343-0106, the phone number. Check it in. Dr. Lou Campagnosi. Hey, Dr. Lou.
Hey, good morning, Sean.
Morning.
Thank you for having me on for just a second. I wanted to follow up on what Quinn was saying about, first of all, the whole question about this bridge, and then what you just said was absolutely on mark with this business with Shelby. And then I did want to just quickly comment on the State Board of Education issue. We really are in full go after these people mode to defeat this SB 397. And I think that people need to understand that if the centralization question isn't stopped, where they just completely take over more and more and more entities, such as the State Board of Education, it is just going to just leave parents completely out of the loop in terms of the education. And I really think that as it stands right now, I mean, we've been fighting Common Core for 8 years now, and the fact of the matter is, despite all of the efforts, the fact is that we have not been able to dent it. But now we do have a chance. And I think that the problem with this 397 is on two edges to this. The fact is we've got this, the attempt to have the board appointed, which we absolutely reject. I'm a little bit stronger on this than Quinn is. This is fundamental to democracy. And I do think that if you end up looking carefully, as Quinn said, This is a bait and switch. This is not getting rid of Common Core. We have to alert the electorate to this and make sure they understand that the first principle is keep your State Board of Education elected, and then we'll deal with Common Core. The fact of the matter is Marsh has set the predicate for getting rid of it by calling out, you know, how terrible education is. We've got to reform it. We've got to fix blah, blah, blah. Well, that's exactly what we've been saying for a long time. So I think we can defeat Common Core on its own merits after we get rid of 397 and stop it. So I think that that's something to think carefully about. And we are organized to do this in terms of your state conservative organizations. And I think that we we can prevail. And the key thing is, can we have each of these state board members stick to the game plan and support getting rid of SB 397? If they do that, there's a natural constituency out there, such as with Jackie Ziegler locally. If Jackie, and she is, we've been working with her, she wants to maintain the board as an elected entity. Ooh. So if all of them do that, and this is an issue, we don't know where they are. I've asked Jackie to look into this, and I think on next Thursday they're having a board meeting, and there's supposed to be an agenda item where they can discuss it. And I think that's going to be a critical thing to see whether or not these folks who are already elected are going to stick to it. If they do, we have a chance to beat these people straight up, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, and Dr. Liu, part of me would say, well, of course they would vote to keep it the way it is because they were elected to those positions, you know, versus being, you know, in a nominated position. But I want to play devil's advocate for a second. It's not every day I get somebody like you on that I can bounce these things off of. So let me just play devil's advocate and say, All right, so do we have the best people? And this is not criticizing one way or another any of the members of the current State Board of Education. But we the people, I think, do a poor job of vetting and researching before we go vote something like this. People really, you know, are the first couple tabs down in their Scantron on a vote and may not pay attention to what they say are down ballot votes, even though we can argue they're probably more important than the up ballot votes. But in that case, do you make sure you have the best people on for the education of our students by we the people voting for that from an uneducated or ignorant or just being ignorant of, not stupid, but being ignorant of who's running versus a situation where you have somebody who has the power to get the vetting done and the best person in those positions for education? Let's say even if Common Core was out of the mix and we didn't have this, you know, bait and switch going on, what would be the best way to get the best people on the State Board of Education to make the best decisions for our schools?
Well, I think the short answer is that, first of all, there are qualified people on there already. So the system has a sort of natural screening, okay?
Okay.
So if you look carefully, their latest board member, like Wayne Reynolds from Huntsville, he has an EDD. Cynthia McClarty has a PhD. Then one of the guys, Jeff Newman, former superintendent out of his, wherever he's from, I can't remember. But the point is that just on the face of what has taken place over time, people who have been elected have the credentials. Jackie is another one, 30 years in education down here. So my sense of it is that the system itself, you know, it is sort of self-regulatory in the sense that people who don't fit the mold of being an educator are not necessarily going to run and get elected. So I think that's one thing that can be done. I think the Republican Party, and, well, the Democratic Party is out of it as far as I'm concerned, but nevertheless, there are Democrats who do win. Yvette Richardson and Ella Bell from Montgomery and Washington County. So you have this situation where, you know, perhaps you're going to find people who are maybe not as qualified, but that's what the system is all about. And I think that the classic case down here was Matt Brown versus Jackie Ziegler. Mm-hmm. And Matt was a decent guy, but, you know, didn't have any kids in the public schools, didn't have public school background himself, advocated for Common Core, and, you know, lost on that, despite the fact that BCA gave him $150,000 for his campaign. So I think the system itself works okay. It's not to say it's perfect, but I'll say this. I'd sure rather have the opportunity to vote for someone on the basis of what I hear and listen to and do my own research. And I realize that maybe that's not the general approach. I got that. But I do think that, you know, the alternative is, okay, you have a problem with your school and you have an issue. The local schools don't do anything about it. Well, what's your alternative? Well, you call Jackie Ziegler and you have an opportunity to voice your concerns, and maybe something will be done. Not a guarantee, but I'll tell you this. If there is no Jackie Ziegler, Mobile and Baldwin counties have absolutely no say about what's going on. And that is the issue. And I think that, you know, to tinker with this not even tinkering, to fundamentally reform it, in Marsh's words, you know, creates a major issue in terms of what you as a parent can think about if you have a problem with the schools. And there are a lot of problems with schools. So why is it that we can't do this? I just think that it doesn't make sense to me. So the short answer is, I think that the system can produce the types of people that are just as qualified as what the governor will produce in terms of
all right.
her appointees.
Good deal. Dr. Liu, I appreciate your interaction on this one, and we'll have to talk about this going forward. Up against the news break right now, coming right back, more of Mobile Mornings. Thank you, Kane. 857 FM Talk 1065 and Mobile Mornings. By the way, next show, one comes up at noon, Midday Mobile, live at Cart Doctor today. 20% off cart accessories with a purchase. FM Talk 1065 goodies. And the crew from Monroe Sausage that was with us yesterday at Allegri Market, they're back.
Yeah.
I had bacon yesterday and sausage. It was fantastic.
And you brought corn back.
Yes, I brought corn back. Big thank you to the folks at Allegri, Vince and Patty, the whole crew. They are so awesome. And yeah, with sweet corn back there in the, I may or may not have taken my cut before it ever came into the station. But then that big bag of sweet corn back there, I had two ears last night, microwaved up. They were fantastic. So, yeah, they got that. But today, Cart Doctor, Monroe Sausage Cooking, FM Talk 106.5 goodies, and, of course, those great deals on carts happening. Every time we're out there and do a live broadcast at Cart Doctor, you know, it's Trish makes, like, crazy deals, like, sell stuff for cost and all that. So I imagine that kind of stuff will happen again today. We're in Theodore at Cart Doctor starting at noon. Mobile County Sheriff Sam Cochran joins me in hour number one of the show. Plus, we'll talk about the Alabama Deep Sea Fishing Rodeo and a whole lot more if that comes up noon today on FM Talk 106.5.